Session number 17624, John Allen, Reel 2.
Mr. Allen, Reel 2. We're talking about your school education, Mr. Allen, and the quality of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my view, I was only at one school in my life up till then, from 5 to 14. So I had 9 years at a Church of England school, which was punctuated by religious studies. Every morning you had a prayer, and on saints' days and religious festivities and festivals, you went from the school, which was adjacent to the church, through the schoolyard, through the churchyard, because you had an adjoining gate into the church itself, St. Cuthbert. And our minister at the time was a man called Sharp, and he had been a padre in the World War One. He was a very interesting man to talk to. And the teachers were good quality. I believe in those days you couldn't be a teacher unless you'd been to university. I may be wrong, because the one chap told me that he was being taught by someone that had come into the schools a different way, into education a different way than university. And at that time, I didn't know which ways you could get into a teaching profession. But our teachers would tell you where they'd been, and a lot of them had been to Durham. And ladies, we had lady teachers in the boys. One particular teacher was a Miss Whitfield, who took English and poetry. And she inspired me to take a great interest in poetry, which I subsequently write quite a bit of myself. And I liked the church part of it, because you had a varied school life. You went into the church quite often. And we lived at that time in Second Street, which a good part of my school life was spent living in Second Street. And we lived right opposite the school gates. And as I was a fairly good scholar, and I was always a monitor or a prefect, I would be in school long before some of the other boys, and I would be upstairs putting the books out on the desk. And the teachers were in by then. And altogether, I enjoyed it. And school life to me was fantastic. I really appreciated what I got from those men and women, and they were good teachers. And I remember one incident where we had a man called Coates, and he had a habit: if a boy was dozing off, he would pick up a little piece of chalk and he would throw it at the boy to wake him up, you see, and quite often he hit him across the head or shoulder. There was one day this boy was lying back almost, well, totally asleep, and his mouth was open. And this Mr. Coates flung a piece of yellow chalk, I remember it to this day, and it went through the air and landed in his mouth. And the boy shot out of his chair and was choking. And it was dry, the chalk, of course. And another boy helped him to get it out of his mouth. And luckily, he never did it again, Mr. Coates, after that, because he could have choked to death. And he played war with the boy. That was a saying often said, playing war with anyone, you know, meaning you were giving them a dressing down. And the head used to, Mr. Ramshaw, used to continually go from class to class, just pop in and scrutinize what was going on.
Was the punishment by the cane?
Cane or a toss, a leather strap with a thong on the end. And I received it once in my life. And it was because I was a monitor, as I said, and a prefect. And we had to clear the boys, the classes were out in the playground. And it was a lunchtime coming back into school. And I was looking out because we lived near the school. And my father was walking from my home, or from his home, through the lane, along down onto Redgeff Road, where we originally lived, and walked along to the Redgeff Bridge, which took him to the Fourth Goods Station, which was a walk of 15 minutes, and part of his lunch hour, of course. He had to have possibly quarter of an hour to come, quarter of an hour back, half an hour for lunch, so it had to be ready, if my mum was at home, that was. Otherwise, she was in hospital ill. And I looked out and I saw my father. And of course, I was three stories up in the school. And I didn't shout at him at all or talk to him even. I just watched him as he walked past the school. And someone in the schoolyard saw me and shouted, "Here's your dad." I went. And the headmaster heard this boy shout, "There's your dad." And he was standing in the passage and he said, "Alan, come to my study." I went to his study. He said, "What are you hanging out the window for?" He said, "It gives the school a poor sort of outlook, you know. What are you doing it for? And who's shouting, 'That's your father?'" I said, "One of the boys in the class." He said, "Oh." He said, "Well, I'm going to punish you. You shouldn't be doing things like that. I'm surprised at you." So he gave me one on each hand, you know, and I thought, "God almighty," you know, I was really flabbergasted.
Did you go home for your lunch?
Oh, yes, every day.
Was that usual for the school day?
Yes, everyone. There was no such thing as school dinners. In fact, it was the last 2 years of my school life, so it must have been 35 and 36 when school milk became available. And it was a half penny, and you got a third of a pint of milk. And it'll show you how meagre the money was, the income was in the home, when there were five of us at home, a boy at Holy Island, and none of us ever got milk, except on two separate occasions, when my mother might have been a little bit extra in her purse, and she said, "Would you like to have some milk at school?" "Yeah, I think I would. I'd like to try it. It's supposed to be good." And he didn't get that much milk at home anyway. It was skimmed milk, you know, which was cheaper. Bottles of full cream milk, I had never seen. In fact, I had never tasted bought bread until I was about 13, because my mother was a great baker of both cakes, scones, bread, and you had the oven built into the fireplace, you know. Every flat did. In fact, I've written a poem about homemade bread, and it really gives you the feeling of the time. But the food that we got as children, it was obviously not the quality it should be, because when I later joined the army, I was underweight. And they said, "This is your background. Now the army will build you up." And believe you me, it did. It really did. It took me from 8 stone and a few pounds at 18 to 11 stone, believe it or not. And when I came home on a leave, not immediately, of course, but in the 3 years I was in Britain before I went overseas, 2.5 years or whatever it was, I remember walking home and my sister was there, and she was a war worker in Coventry, in Warwickshire, and she said, "I didn't recognise you. Where have you got the beef from?" And you're a bigger person altogether. And it was the outdoor life and the food.
Regular. Can we stick with school for a little longer? What about the sporting side of school life?
Did you get
involved with that?
Which?
Did you get involved with the sporting
side? Oh, yes. In fact, I loved it. I was a bit of a runner. And I got involved in the running side in sports. Also the football and cricket, but I wasn't excessively fantastic at it, although I liked it. I wasn't a boy that asserted myself, actually, and I was a small boy. I wasn't a very big boy, because that was one of the things that this man, Harry Barnaby, couldn't believe. He said, "If you're the fellow I think you are, you're a tiny kid." Because I said, "You were a big kid," because I said, "One time you ran into me in a corridor," and I says, "You knocked me flying," because I said to you, "Why, you're heavy," and he said, "Ah, you're light." So that was, and the sporting side was quite good, and we had some very, very good lads. We had one boy who was a cricketer of some prominence, and he was a pal of mine. He was a good lad. And he was brought... There was one Saturday when we played on the Saturday mornings at North Durham Cricket Ground during the cricket season. And Robert Pickles was his name. He scored 54 runs and he took 6 wickets for less than 13 runs. 13 runs or something. 13, 14, and he was hauled in front of the assembly in the morning, and he was lauded for his work. And the headmaster, Mr. Ramshaw, said, Bob Pickles did a wonderful thing on Saturday. We won a match against another school, and Brighton Avenue School, and Robert scored 54 runs, and he took half of the wickets. And I think he's got a future in cricket. Well, he didn't have, because the war came and took a hold of us, and we were all put into this melting pot of forces, which he probably did some when he was a forces man.
Outside of school and in the streets where you lived, how did you spend your time as a child?
If I could just go back to the school for 1 minute. We had a class of 52, an average 50 to 52. And I've heard it said that they now want to reduce these much more. And they were asking in the press, "Were you in a class of over 44? And of course, I think nearly everybody was in those days. And I kept in touch with my school from the army. Kept in touch with a teacher called Hall, who took over from Mr. Ramshaw as head. And I sent him what I would call communiques from the army, just to say what we were doing. And I'd been a prominent student, and he remembered me, and he used to tell the youngsters who I was, what I had done, and it was quite something, because I used to get letters back from little chaps who were about 10 then, you see. And people used to say to me in the Leicesters where I was, "Who are these? Who's the kids that write to you?" You know? So they're at my old school. I write to them through the head. And they thought it was fantastic. Now you got onto something else then.
Your leisure life, the time that you were playing in the streets and the place.
Oh, yes. You played in the streets, definitely. Now, sensibly, with living near a school, it would have been policy, both from the police point of view and the local authority point of view, to allow kiddies to play in those vast schoolyards, but they wouldn't. And the head, in fact, I remember several of the boys' parents going to the school and saying, why can't they have this school? There was a huge playground for the boys, there was a bigger one for the girls, and there was an underground playground where we used to do PT, physical training, and it was under the broad building of the school. So it was really like a dungeon, but it was an underground and used as a playground on wet days. And now they use school yards for that. In fact, I see them do it, I think they've got permission. But we used to climb into it and sometimes go into the school was always closed, and the caretaker made sure it was, Mr. Cursop, and his son was in my class. And to get over the fact that he had closed all the gates, we used to go into the church, which was at the top of our street, walk out under Bensham Road, into the church, through the churchyard, into the open gate that led into the schoolyard, and you played a little bit there. But if the police saw you, they chased you, or they gave you a clip around the ear.
What games were you playing?
Pardon?
What games were you playing?
Football. Football, cricket. Well, when you had girls with you, which sometimes happened, small little groups of boys, I wouldn't call them gangs, they were just chums, 4 and 5, neighbours' children, you know. Sometimes you had girls, and to accommodate them, you had you'd had games like Heidi, where one person had to find another if you hid somewhere, or Relievo, you know, and things like that, and children's games. Or we went as a body to the local park, Saltwell Park. Some of us used to go to the swimming baths if you could afford it. It was tuppence, I think, to get in. And this is what I say held back a lot of youngsters, because there was no way parents that had 3 and 4 children, as we had, some of them had more, they couldn't afford to take them. For instance, on the Saturday, the local cinema was called the Bensham, and you would have a queue of children that were lucky enough to have the tuppence to go in. It was tuppence downstairs and threepence upstairs. And I remember my mum had said to us three, the younger ones, just to get us out of our hair, I think, you can go to the pictures today. And it was a Saturday, sunny day. We got in this queue, my sister, my twin sister and I, and little Tom, and we wanted to see this particular film, Cowboy or something. And we had sixpence among the three of us, you see, to get in. And we got right up to the door, and the custodian, the doorman, said, "It's full. Downstairs is full," and we were right up to the door. He said, "There are how many seats upstairs? 20 or 24 or something." He says, "You can go upstairs," and you could hear voices saying, "I haven't got money to go upstairs." So I looked at my sister and my young brother, and I said to Betty, "Betty, take my tuppence, and you two go in." And they did. And I walked home, which was a small journey, a quarter of a mile. And in those days, you were quite safe. I think, and yet I've heard since, that you weren't really safe, because there were queery you know, very dubious character still going around. But on average, I feel the children were so much safer then that it was a different world. And I got home, and this particular day, my mum said, what are you home for? Where are the others? She said, we couldn't get in downstairs. So she said, and you gave them your money, and they've gone in. Right, very kind of you. And they came back and they said they'd seen the picture. And I remember my sister saying, Jack gave us his tuppence and we got in that way, Mum. Ah, yes. So I think it was a month or so later and my dad had said, I think you're old enough to go to the pictures with me now. And I always got Jack in the family. And I said, I'd never been to the pictures in the evening, and it was the first house, 7 o'clock, and we saw Les Miserables, and it was a pathetic story for me because I was a young boy and I didn't want to know, and I remember the actors, and anyway, I enjoyed it because I went with my dad and got back home, and that was the first time I ever went to the pictures in the evening.
Did the church play a role in your life?
Oh, yes, very much so, actually, because you knew the vicar as a friend, and he knew your parents. In fact, he had a phenomenal memory. He knew every boy and girl at that school. He was marvellous. He knew you had three sisters, for instance, and you had another brother. And I remember saying to him once on a Sunday, we used to go to church three times on the Sunday. The Sunday morning service, the Sunday school in the afternoon, and the Sunday service at night. And then when you reached 14 and you were working, if you were working, a lot of youngsters got jobs at 14. There were no jobs at all, really, but they helped at home, messenger boys and things like that. And He said to me once, there are five of you in your family, aren't there, John? And I said, no, there are six. He says, well, who are they? Because you've got three sisters and another brother. I said, I've got another brother. And I told him where he was, and he said, oh, Holy Island, I go there for my holidays. Where on earth are your people up there then? This your name? Alan, I said, yes. I said, they'd been there for centuries. And he said, I'll make some inquiries. He said, let me know when you're going, and I'll try and be there at the same time. Oh, I must have spoken to your grandparents many times. And he had, because they knew this Mr. Sharp, you know, the vicar. And he'd taken services at Holy Island.
Were you expected to pay a tithe at that time to the church, a portion of your father's wage?
No, no. In fact, between you and I, I'd never heard of the thing until I think it was the Roman Catholic boys that told me that happened, you know, that they gave money to the church. And I said, why? You've got no money to live on, for God's sake, you know. Ah, but you do. You give it to the church. And I thought it was rather strange.
Did you join the Boy Scouts or the Church Lantern Brigade?
No, I didn't. No. Never did, because I was a bit of a... I'm very handy with a pencil or a paintbrush. In fact, I've got some of my stuff hanging on our walls. And I met a boy in the supermarket on Low Fell. I was in the supermarket at Low Fell, and I saw a man who I hadn't seen since the end of the war. And he was called Douglas Percy, and he was in my class. And funnily enough, his father has a connection with Holy Island in the Percy family. In fact, I believe they trace back to the same Percy family that's the Duke of Northumberland. And I saw him with who I took to be his wife, and they were picking up goods in the supermarket quite recently. And I thought, well, if I go out to the checkout and he's there with his wife, I'll have a word with him, because I'm sure it's him. And we happened to be in the same queue. So I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, I think I know you. I said, I'll have a word with you when you get out. He said, yeah, okay. So we got out, and he introduced me to his wife. And he said, I don't know who it is, but he says, this chap says he knows me. So I said, you're Dougie Percy, aren't you? And he said, yeah. And his wife went, oh, dear me. Whoever called you Dougie, you know? And I said, well, we all did. She said, oh, his name's Douglas. I said, oh, I realise that, but he was Dougie to us. He said, well, who are you then? I said, well, look at me and tell me, do I not resemble someone? I said, you even used to sit beside me at one time in the class. He said, no, I don't recognise you at all. I said, well, my name's Alan. He said, Alan what? I said, Alan, John Alan. He went, good Lord, you're not John Alan. He said, where did you get the size from? I said, well, the forces. He said, oh. He said, well, I was in the RAF. I said, oh, I was in the army. So we got talking, and he was pleased to see me. He said, how did you recognize me? I said, you haven't altered. I said, in fact, I recognise everyone that I was at school with, and yet no one has ever recognised me. He said, no, I wouldn't have recognised you. Anyway, he said, any time you see me, give me a nod. No, come and see us, or anything like that. I've found a lot of people are like that. They're very reticent, that they don't want you too close, sort of style. Because, it's fair enough, it's what? Since you were 14, since you had contact, really. But I did see him after the war, and he was bustling ahead of me in Gateshead. And I thought, that's Douglas Percy. But I never saw him again.
You left school at 14?
14, yeah.
What happened to you then?
Well, my brother had come down from Holy Island, and he was working for a company called Liner Concrete as an office boy. And he had to take plans to a printing company to be copied, and the originals made into prints in various processes, Auslid, which were dye blueprints and white, black and white prints. And he got talking to the manager of the printing company, and he heard one of the staff saying, we need other two boys to help out here and train. And he said, I have a young brother leaving school shortly, and that would be about the May of that year. And I had a birthday, the 1st of July, and they allowed me to leave on the 30th of June. And consequently, I started work on my birthday, the 1st of July, 1936. So I was 14 on that day, and nobody at the works knew it was my birthday, and I never thought of saying, it's my birthday today. And I had worn long trousers for the first time, you see, and I got the job. But he'd come home, my brother, and he said, Mum, I think I can get our Jack a job at the Central Drawing Office in the Royal Arcade in Newcastle, which is demolished now to make way for a big roundabout. And he said, you have to take him over and be interviewed for the job. Well, it was a formality, really. And my mother and I went over. And in those days, you didn't have money to go by tram, even though my father was working. We walked the whole way from Bensham to Newcastle and then back again. And I remember that there were two brothers used to run this company. And one branch was in Newcastle and the other branch was in Glasgow, and they were Scottish men. And they came from Largs in Ayrshire. Is it all right to carry on?
Yes.